Okay, quick quiz. What do Abraham Lincoln, Jesus Christ, and Zach Galifianakis all have in common? Wait for it. Wait for it. Yep, you're right. All three of these men, all three of these prominent men, have beards. Why is that significant? And even more relevantly, why is that constitutional? Well, as you will learn today, as I learned today, beards actually have an enormous constitutional significance. There are at least three, maybe four constitutional provisions I can think of right off the top of my head that have a great deal to do with beards, or I should say more properly, with the efforts of some people even in the government, to restrict the ability of people to wear beards. It's your Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and it's all about fuzzy facial hair.
Your Weekly Constitutional is produced in partnership with the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution at James Madison's Montpelier. Your host is Professor of Constitutional Law, Stuart Harris.
You've heard me speak with my buddy Joseph Fitzinakis on several occasions. We've talked about cyber espionage, and we've talked about the history of wiretapping. We've talked about all sorts of interesting things, typically having to do with national security, because, as I'm sure you remember, Joseph is the director of the King Institute for Security and Intelligence Studies, KISSES for short, at King University in Bristol, Tennessee. And he's a fascinating fellow, and he's got all sorts of interesting stories, and I love having him on the show. And of course, he's got a standing invitation to call me or email me anytime he comes up with an interesting idea, and come on and we'll talk again. Well, he sent me an email recently that I had to read more than once before I realized it wasn't a joke. He said, "Stuart, I want to come on the show and talk about beards." And I emailed him back and I said, "Well, sure, but even though I have a very broad definition of what's constitutionally relevant, how exactly do I tie this into the Constitution?" And then he just started talking. And it turns out that there have been a number of significant cases, many of them constitutional, including one right now that was just argued in front of the United States Supreme Court, and they all center on facial hair. Yeah, I was surprised too, and you will be as well, because not only did Joseph show up, two of his friends showed up from the Tri-Cities Beard Club. Their names are Ollie and Maggie. Let's start with Joseph.
My name is Joseph Fitzinakis.
I recognize you.
You do?
Yes, you've been
you
here
before.
You know why? Yes.
Because I have a beard.
You do?
When you have a beard, people recognize you more readily.
Indeed they do, and you are very dashing, I must say.
Thank you very much.
In what capacity are you here?
Today I'm here as the president of the Tri-Cities Beard Club, hence the fact that I have a beard.
Not in your usual guise as the director of the King Institute for Security and Intelligence Studies?
That's just a side job.
That's a side job. So your real vocation is?
The president of the Beard Club.
The president of the Beard Club. Well, thank you for being with us, Joseph.
Thank you.
Okay, and Maggie?
Maggie Mueller is my name, and I am the chair of the Women's Auxiliary of the Beard Club of the Tri-Cities.
That is also remarkable. Do you have also a side vocation that you do?
Actually, I do work at King with Dr. Fitzinakis here. I work as the executive coordinator of the Security and Intelligence Institute.
I did not know that. Glad to have you with us, Maggie. And who are you, sir?
I am Oliver Crockwell from Zazie's Coffee House in Abingdon.
No, you're not from Zazie's. You're from someplace else.
Originally from Ireland, and I've been in Southwest Virginia for 10 years now. So.
And you and I have actually met at Zazie's.
We have indeed. Yeah.
Welcome.
Well, delighted to be here. Thanks for having us.
And what is your capacity? I'm guessing it has something to do with your facial hair as well.
Indeed. And we, one of the original, or the sponsors of the beard competition, which is upcoming in a couple of weeks, I guess, which we'll talk about later on. But this is 1 week's facial hair, so I'm
That's fine. 1 week's facial
yeah.
hair. You are here suit, sir.
Yeah. I'm pretty lucky. My brother's actually bald and he can't grow any hair, so I'm lucky I've got good, strong facial hair growing.
Indeed you do. Well, okay, obviously we're here to talk about beards, and three of us in the room have them. I'm sorry to say that Maggie does not. When Joseph told me he was bringing Maggie, I was really looking forward to meeting my first bearded lady. Your face looks very smooth.
Well, thank you and no thank you. I always surround myself by bearded gentlemen. So all of my husband has a very impressive beard, which he has dedicated himself to since the wedding.
Wait a minute. So you
really
met him when he was clean shaven?
He was moderately clean shaven. He's never really been super clean shaven.
And it was only after the nuptials that he got serious about the beard.
No, it was an ultimatum, pretty much. I told him he had to grow a beard or else the wedding would not happen.
You can see my surprise, but I shouldn't be surprised.
You should not be surprised.
I should not be, because there are a lot of women mm-hmm. who prefer bearded men, mm-hmm. and my wife is among them. She wasn't originally, but when I grew, my first serious beard was at the age of 40, and recently I just thought to myself, well, maybe I'll just shave it off and see what my face looks like after all these years, and I happened to mention it casually to my wife, not thinking it was a big deal, and she said, no, no, that's... you're not. And I said, why? I said, do you like it that much? She said, I'm used to you. So in her case, it may be more inertia, but I've gone a little bit too directly to the subject. Let's just introduce it generally. Why are we talking about beards, Joseph?
Well, we're talking about beards because they're important, number one. But number two, the goal of our organization is to basically express dedication and congratulate those who have beards. Or it's for those who either have beards or those who love those who have beards, which pretty much the entire population of the United States, I would say.
Maybe so. But just a second. I mean, I know even as a bearded man and who's had a beard now for 13 years, I find this to be, if not unique, a very rare focus for a club.
I have to correct you there. The beard lifestyle in America is picking up. There are actually hundreds and
the
hundreds.
The beard lifestyle.
It is. We call this a beard community.
I had no idea.
Which consists of both men and women, actually. But the beard community as a whole is actually very representative of all walks of life in the United States. And we fight for recognition of the fact that we have beards. We fight for tax breaks, in fact. We think that we deserve tax breaks because we make America more beautiful, number one. Number two, we save energy by not shaving. So imagine the amount of plastic or amount of razors that we save every
year. Petrochemicals. We're saving petrochemicals.
Water.
Heating costs.
Heating costs, thank you.
And not to mention the electric razors and the carbon emissions.
So we think we're being discriminated against because we don't have tax breaks. And also, we also fight against discrimination for bearded people. Which is evident in language. For example, we use the term clean shaven, which is a very discriminatory term.
It implies
that beards are dirty, which in fact is exactly the opposite.
Well, most of the time they're clean. This morning I actually had one of my students at your university say to me, Professor Harris, I'm sorry to say this, but you've got something in your beard. I really appreciated her pointing that out. I think it was a bit of my breakfast. But for the most part, they're very clean.
But it also shows also how useful beards can be. You can put all kinds of things in there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a multitasking type of, accessory.
Whenever my wife points out that I have some food in my beard, I just tell her I'm saving it for lunch.
Is that right?
All right. Well, okay. The funny thing was, is when you first brought this up to me, and in fact, we're going to be talking here in just a minute about the Tri-Cities Beard Club and the upcoming competition. When you first brought this up to me, I thought it was somewhat facetious, and then you pointed out to me that it actually isn't, and that there's some very serious discrimination going on, and there are some constitutional issues.
Right. Beards bring up some of the most important legal cases in recent, in my opinion, American history.
I don't know if I would go quite as far as that, but they certainly implicate some serious issues. We'll get to those in just a second. Ollie, what's the story with you? I mean, I see you got a beard. I see that you're very proud that it's very impressive after only 2 weeks. But so what's up? You're the president of this or the chair or what?
I don't know, the host of the competition? We started the competition back 3 years ago. It was just an idea with No Shave November and stuff. And I had no idea when I started first how serious people took growing beards and stuff that important until I met Dr. Fitzanakis, and I looked online because we wanted to have this competition. I found on Facebook there was actually a Bristol Beard Club, and I got in contact with Bristol Beard Club. And then I got in contact with Dr. Fitzanakis. But when we had the competition, our first competition, we had some people arrive from Richmond. And at first, again, I thought we were just doing this for fun, but these people showed up, and it was like serious competition. I mean, these guys really had costumes. I mean, it was really, really serious. So I was delighted Dr. Fitzanakis helped us and we got it up and running as an event. And it's grown ever since. I mean, it's our third year and last year was really big. So it's So he's given me inspiration to grow my beard. It's
it's just an inspiration.
Fantastic speeches.
Was he also your inspiration for getting involved in this, Maggie?
Yes, actually, I hosted a Mr. King College pageant when I was a student at King University, and I believe you came up to me afterwards, and we discussed doing a beard competition on campus. That never actually ended up happening, but that was sort of what sparked my interest, because I realized that he was actually being serious, first of all, and that he really was very passionate about beards. And so then my dad actually ended up growing out a beard, and it's a beautiful gray beard. He kind of looks like the Dos Equis man. And by that, I mean, I think he is the Dos Equis man.
The most interesting man in the world.
The most interesting man in the world. And then my brother has had a beard since he was in high school, and now my husband. So pretty much everybody around me has beards. And so when Dr. Fitzanakis mentioned this, I was like, okay, he's right, because all of these really influential people have beards.
Well, I think we've got the general introduction then now. Joseph, do you want to tell us about some of the important constitutional issues that beards implicate?
Well, of course, the growing a beard is important for a person's appearance. Mm-hmm. And a person's appearance has legal implications. It is how we project ourselves, so it's emotionally very important to us. Mm-hmm. As species, as you know, humans have a very... So we're very interested in status and being seen as positive members of our flock or our society, as it were. And there are many legal implications for the right to grow a beard. Now, consider the numbers of cases of institutions, even in America, which in my opinion is the freest country in the world. How many people are not allowed to grow beards?
A lot. When I was in the military, no beard.
Right.
I guess police officers are often not allowed to. And then there are others where maybe you're not specifically prohibited, but you don't feel that you can. In fact, I mentioned a moment ago that I grew my first serious beard when I was 40, and a good part of that reason was because before that I was practicing law. And I just had the perception that my clients, my bosses, the courts, judges, expected, to use that terrible term, clean-shaven lawyers.
Right.
And it was really only after I started teaching that I realized that now I had a bit more license.
Yeah. I do have a request, so let's not use the word shave anymore in this
Not clean-shaven. Okay, what am I supposed to say?
Or shave at all.
Shave at all.
Don't mention the word
shave. That's just an offensive word.
Thank you.
I'm very sorry. Okay,
no worries.
I'll try not to do that.
Okay.
Barefaced, perhaps?
Let's say that, yeah.
Barefaced. I was barefaced.
Let's say naked-faced.
Naked-faced for all of those years. Okay, good. It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and today we're speaking, of all things, we're speaking about beards. And we've just learned that, as with many other sensitive social issues, certain terms, such as clean-shaven, are now taboo. After the break, we will have our constitutional quiz, and then we'll return and speak to Joseph Fitzanakis and his friends Ollie and Maggie from the Tri-Cities Beard Club. Stay tuned.
Had a girl, an actual girlfriend, yeah. She asked me to trim back my face hair. But nobody ever tells me to shave, tells me to shave. So I dumped her.
Doug Smith, you just showed up in the studio. I guess that means it's time for the quiz.
It's time for the quiz, Stuart.
Well, you're rather insistent about it. I wasn't expecting you at this particular time, and I must say it's a terrible inconvenience, but since you're so insistent, I guess we'll go ahead and have one.
More quizzes.
Okay, we'll do that. Do you have a quiz or a riddle today? I'm curious.
We have a quiz today.
A quiz with a multiple choice answer?
Sure.
Maybe?
We'll give some answers. We'll give some answer options, but only one of them will be true.
Okay.
This time.
Very good. Well, do we have a contestant?
Yes, we do. My name is Jason, and I'm from Abingdon, Virginia.
Abingdon, Virginia is such a lovely, lovely place. Do you just love living there?
It is great. It is great for the family, and it's a great place to live.
And it's got beautiful architecture. It's got that federal brick stuff going on, and it's got the Martha Washington Inn.
And the Creeper Trail near there.
Creeper Trail. It starts right in town. You can rent a bike and ride it, and they've got the Barter Theater.
Yeah.
Right on Main Street.
Where's a good place to eat?
I'll let you answer. Jason, where's a good place or two you'd recommend to Doug?
So certainly the Tavern Restaurant is interesting both for its historical purposes, and the food is very good.
Right, but Doug is kind of a snob, so is that highfalutin enough for him? I'm wondering if maybe he should go to the Starving Artist.
He could go to the Starving Artist. There is a small cafe on the street where the Creeper originates that's a little bit out of the way that's very good as well.
All right. Well, we got lots of snob options for Doug.
I like that. This is like your weekly constitutional brought to you by the Abington Visitors Bureau.
Indeed it is. Well, it's a great place. It really is. And it's not far from, of course, Johnson City, where we produce the show. And it's just a great area, great part of the country. Okay, Doug, what sort of quiz do you got today?
All right, we've got a great quiz today. So here we go. I'm going to read the question and give you four options, one of which will be right. What was the biggest city in America during the Constitutional Convention, 1787? 1787, Constitutional Convention.
Okay.
Biggest city. Was it A, Richmond, Virginia, B, New Amsterdam, New York, C, Washington, D.C., or D, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania?
In my sentiments, exactly. well, I'm going to rule out New Amsterdam, New York, just because of the timing. I'm going to
Wait a minute. Explain that a little bit. What happened to New Amsterdam? Had it fallen into the ocean?
Not yet, I don't think. But I'm thinking in that period that perhaps it certainly wasn't the Mecca as it is today, and that perhaps it had not grown at that point just yet. Maybe as a center of population.
Okay.
D.C., I'm kind of thinking along the same lines that it wasn't yet, it was still just a fledgling area right there, scoped out for the future capital. So I want to rule that one out as well.
So you're left with what, Doug? Philadelphia and?
Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond, Virginia. Oh, yeah.
Richmond. Yeah.
When I heard Richmond, I liked that idea. I know there was a lot going on in Richmond during the convention and certainly before and afterwards. And then Philadelphia came in there at the end and threw me off a little bit since it's where a lot of the goings-on took place as well. So in my mind, I've narrowed it down to those two. And in my heart, I want to say Richmond. I'm not thoroughly convinced in my mind that it is Richmond and not Philadelphia.
So a little of that Virginia bias coming through.
It is, yeah.
Well, you're going to go with your bias, or you're going to go with Philadelphia?
Goodness. I'm going to have to go with Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm looking at Doug.
City of brotherly love. It's true.
Oh, well done. Well done, Jason. Yeah. You got it exactly right.
That's at the time, 40,000 inhabitants.
Yeah.
Huge.
Which is huge for the time. That's right. You know, today we have, according to the Googles, 316 million people in the United States. At the time of the convention, Constitutional Convention, only 4 million.
That is remarkable.
40,000 of those lived in Philadelphia.
And that wouldn't even fill up a decent-sized college football stadium.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, the town, 7,000 street lamps.
Very important. Got to see.
10 newspapers. That's back when you could make money with a newspaper.
Right.
University. And wait for it, 33 churches.
We are a religious people.
Hallelujah.
And Franklin, Benjamin Franklin, the first citizen of Philadelphia, was a supporter of most of those churches.
Yeah. The Constitutional Convention, one of the reasons they met in Philadelphia is because it was kind of the center of the universe for America at the time. It was the largest city in North America at the time. And it was, quite frankly, pretty convenient for people to come up and down the East Coast, which was largely where the states were
for
the convention.
Easiest mode of transport up and down the coastal. Yep.
Still not easy to get there.
No, exactly. One of the you had very, very good analysis, and you went through it very logically, Jason, but I would one or two glosses on there. New Amsterdam, of course, is now New York. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was part of the question, is that it didn't really exist as New Amsterdam anymore, but it was, of course, ultimately became New York when the British took it over. Mm-hmm. And it was, in fact, the second city in terms of population after Philadelphia at that point, but it really overtook Philadelphia in the early 19th century, and especially once the Erie Canal opened.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Was that the driving factor, was the Erie Canal?
Oftentimes I've heard historians say that's the one that sealed it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was already probably the best deep water port in the United States and was giving Philadelphia a run for its money. So it might have become commercially preeminent anyway, but I think the Erie Canal made it the gateway to the West for basically the early 19th century.
Well, Hamilton would have been so happy.
Oh, he would have been. I think he was, wherever he was at that time. And the other thing we mentioned, what was the other city that we eliminated there? Washington, D.C., you were right. Mm-hmm. Washington, D.C., you described it as fledgling. Actually, it was non-existent.
It was there. It was a swamp.
It was a swamp. And it was
that's right.
Was not yet designated. The Constitution in 1787 said, you know, we're going to have a 100-square-mile area, but it took them another couple of years to actually designate that as that place. And so I think maybe the settlement of Georgetown was within what's now the district, but that would be about it. It wasn't really the capital city at all.
Yeah, and it has, I mean, it's grown a little bit over time, I think. But generally speaking, that whole area, that northern Virginia and southern Maryland area, has really become D.C. proper.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Virginia, we call it NOVA, Northern Virginia.
Northern Virginia.
As opposed to where I live, which is ROVA, rest of Virginia.
That's right.
But you're in the happy part of Virginia. Charlottesville is the happiest city in the United States.
It is. It's because it's only a short drive to Montpelier.
That's why.
The home of James
Madison. Of course it is. Of course it is. Well, Doug, thank you very much for your time. And of course, Jason, thank you. And you've earned yourself a T-shirt. So send us an email at ywc@montpelier.org and give us your T-shirt size. And we'll have that plus your pocket constitution from James Madison's Montpelier speeding on its way to you.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. And thanks you, Doug.
You bet. Hey, it's the Constitution. I read it for the articles.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and today our subject is facial hair, or if you prefer, beards. And my guests are Joseph Fitzinakis, who is typically on here talking about things like cyber espionage and spying and such, and his friends Ollie and Maggie from something called the Tri-Cities Beard Club. And believe it or not, they are in the process of convincing me that beards are a very constitutional subject. Of course, the one that comes to mind immediately is free expression.
It is.
One's appearance, the symbolic aspects of one's appearance, have been recognized repeatedly by the U.S. Supreme Court as being a protected First Amendment free expression interest.
Right. And it's not just soldiers and police officers of either sex that cannot grow beards. It's also school teachers often are not allowed to grow beards by their employers. We have the cases of bus drivers, bank employees are not allowed to grow beards, firefighters are not allowed to grow beards. And we think that's there's something seriously wrong with that.
Well, when it comes to government employees, of course, the Constitution is implicated because you've got the government prohibiting people from expressing themselves through growing facial hair. When a private employer does it, it's probably more a matter of employment law. And, you know, that's typically statutory law. And often the arguments are around free expression, as I've said. But there's also another very important, both constitutional and statutory concept that often is implicated, and that is religious freedom. Because according to some religions, notably some aspects of the Muslim religion, beards are either favored or maybe even required. And in fact, I think there's one case in front of the Supreme Court right now, isn't there, that involves that?
There is. But before I get to this, I want to state also that pretty much every monotheistic religion has a strong relationship with beards. For example, it's not just Islam. Islamic religion, a lot of people would tell you that, you know, it's actually against their holy law to shave completely. And they even have like expressions like, "I swear by Muhammad's beard," or "If I tell a lie, may my beard fall off," which is
really,
it's actually quite interesting. But also Judaism, they go by Leviticus, which prescribes there that you should not mar the corners of your beard. And in fact, for some Orthodox Jews, shaving with a razor is prohibited, but also Christianity.
Before we leave the Jews, I understand that part of that's also a prohibition on shedding one's own blood. So it's I was explained to me once years ago that that was part of the prohibition, is that you if you're using a razor, you might nick yourself, you might cut yourself, and that that was also something that was prohibited religiously.
That sounds, strikes me as...
It rings true, but please, right. if I'm stating it wrong, I don't mean to, but certainly Judaism, at the very least, encourages the wearing of beard by men. Okay.
And the term beard is very, very often used in the Torah and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But in Christianity as well, there's several aspects in the Bible where, you know, the command to grow a beard or to not cut your beard is very explicit. You know, let me remind you that Jesus had a beard. Can you think of Jesus without the beard? It would not be the same, right?
Wow.
So the beard, the image of the
bare-faced Jesus,
right.
That is a striking concept.
It would not be a thing as appealing, you know, to most people. So I think the idea of a beard is very much connected with the idea of religion, period.
I think you're probably right. I don't mean to pry into anyone's particular beliefs, but is there any religious aspect to why you all are so into beards?
Not really, no. But I can see the points behind it and why as a, from a religious standpoint, that if you think that you should have a beard and it, the Torah or the Bible says so, why not?
It is coming back. I mean, there's more hipsters and stuff these days, but it's still younger people.
Well, that feeling of simply, why not? Or why is the government messing with my facial hair? That is what we commonly would refer to as a liberty interest. And there is a concept that's very, very complicated called substantive due process, which is a misnamed concept if ever there was one. But it is simply a doctrine that allows courts to find that people have constitutional rights that might not be explicitly stated in the Constitution. Because I'm sorry to say the word beard does not actually appear in the Constitution. But
what?
I know it's a shocker, Joseph. It's a shocker, but it doesn't actually appear. But what I'm about to say is that through this doctrine, through a couple of different constitutional doorways, courts could very well find that people simply have the right to have facial hair because the government has no business messing with it. So that sense that I think a lot of people share, why would the government ever tell me that I have to appear a certain way or present a certain face, quite literally, to the world, that would offend a lot of people's constitutional ideas. But the one we haven't really fully discussed yet is the religious objection, because that's the one that is right before the court now, isn't it?
It is. There's actually a case right now, Holt versus Hobbs, in which Gregory Holt was an inmate in a correctional facility in Arkansas, has sued the Arkansas Department of Corrections, saying that he is entitled to grow a beard on religious grounds. And according to the law of the corrections facility in Arkansas, he cannot grow a beard more than, I think, an inch, or is that
half
right?
Inch, I think.
Half an inch.
Yeah.
And he says that there's no rational reason why he shouldn't be able to.
And the prison says it has a reason for its prohibition. What's the prison's reason?
The reason is that they're afraid that the prisoners might hide things in their beards.
A half inch long beard.
Right.
About as long as yours is right now.
Yeah, it's an irrational thought when you think about it, particularly when the same prison allows inmates to grow long hair.
Yeah, this is one of those cases that, again, sounds very constitutional, sounds like religious freedom. Without getting too down into the weeds, it's actually a statutory case, and the particular statute at issue is called the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, abbreviated RLUIPA, and what it does is it creates a statutory right for an individual who is institutionalized, in this case a prisoner in an Arkansas prison, and therefore who's, you know, obviously had to surrender a lot of control, a statutory right for that person to not have his or her religious beliefs substantially burdened. And if the prisoner can show that his or her religious beliefs are substantially burdened, then the government has a great difficulty justifying any such restrictions. It has to undergo something called strict scrutiny. We won't get into all the details there. But basically, if Gregory Holt can make the case that his religious beliefs are being burdened by this, and I think he's made that initial showing, then it's very, very hard for the government to justify restricting him from growing his beard. And that's exactly the analysis they went through. They looked at what the prison was saying, and the prison was saying, in order to control this dangerous prisoner and to keep control of our institution, we cannot allow him to have this short beard. And the court's questioning at the Supreme Court level recently seemed very, very skeptical. They seemed to think it was, in fact, something irrational that was going on there. So I think you might actually, Joseph and Maggie and Ollie, you may actually have a Supreme Court decision in your favor, and it may even be unanimous in the very near future, so you can wave that around.
We will.
All right. Well, let's talk about this this beard contest that's coming up now.
Yes, the beard competition is November 22nd, and we're going to host it at Wolf Hills Brewing in Abingdon, some Park Street in Abingdon.
Right.
We're hoping, last year we had probably 30 to 50 competitors, so we're hoping double that this year. And we have different categories. We have best beard, best goatee, freestyle, Mr. Beard.
Best moustache.
Best moustache. Best fake beard. We're still waiting for the bearded lady to come.
We do have a women's section too.
Right.
This year we're raising funds. We're going to collect some money on the day for the Nice Wonger Children's Hospital in Johnson City. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping we'll raise some money from them. That's a fun event. I mean, that's what we're doing for too. It's just for fun, a lot of fun too.
Now, before we sat down here, and you were encouraging me to compete this year, but when I commented that my beard is nothing special, you said, but it's not just the beard. There's more to this competition than just the beard itself. So what is a competitor being judged on?
Indeed, we have different sections. We go on personality. We ask some world affair questions. We just get
world affair questions
with regard to beards and stuff. And we get to know the person. I mean, really right. Get to know them and see.
Wait a minute. So if a competitor shows up, and it's at the Wolf Hill Brewery in Abingdon, if a competitor shows up, they register, I guess?
They can register on the day, yeah.
Okay, register on the day. Is there a fee?
There's no fee. It's free to enter.
Free to enter. And then at a certain point, you're going to call their name up?
2 o'clock, whatever category they choose to go in, we'll call them up. We'll examine them and we'll interview them on stage.
You go up on a stage, and then it's like the Miss America contest, except with a bunch of guys with beards.
Yeah. And some of them take it very serious. I mean, as I said, we've had some guys at beard competitions in their life. So. And the World Beard Championship was just 2 weeks ago. And
it's the World Beard Championship. Mm-hmm. It was on television.
It was on television. It was on the West Coast, I believe.
I believe somewhere in West Coast. Yeah. In fact, in the past, the Germans have won it several times in a row.
It's Germans.
But, exactly. but this year, America won it back.
We got it back. Yes, national exactly. pride.
They're creative. I mean, there's people that have like handlebar mustaches, and I mean, they're just very intense.
Well, Joseph posted a picture on Facebook, and it was a guy who was obviously a very long and elaborate beard if it had just been left more or less natural. But then he had essentially shaved his chin, so he'd created a gap in the middle of it, and then he pulled up both sides into handlebars. So it wasn't just a mustache, but it was a beard that had been fashioned into what looked like an enormous handlebar mustache.
It goes back to the whole idea of creativity, because we always say that people who have beards are more creative usually than those who are naked-faced. And also,
it's art, too.
It's art. Yeah. So it's a form of art. It's a lifestyle, actually. Yeah. And in addition to this, you know, people who have beards have very open hearts in a way. That's why we're raising money for charity, and that shows that as well.
It's your Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm having a roundtable discussion with three bearded folk, or I should say two bearded folk and one admirer of bearded folk. And to my great surprise, I found out there are enormous constitutional implications of facial hair. After the break, we will finish our discussion with Joseph and Maggie and Ollie, all from the Tri-Cities Beard Club. Stick around.
So I turned my head and I kissed him. It was just as I feared. There's nothing like a man with a good-looking beard. No, there's nothing like a man with a good-looking beard.
It's your Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and this week we're having a roundtable discussion on the constitutional significance of beards. You heard me right, of beards. And if you've been listening in, you've found that there actually is a great deal of constitutional significance. And you've also learned that there is an upcoming competition in Abingdon, Virginia, for all of those in your local or listening area, being hosted by the Tri-Cities Beard Club. And some of the judges are actually going to be from the fairer sex.
Every year we have at least two of our judges are women on purpose, because we think that women have a special say when it comes to beards.
Certainly with respect to their husbands, if they are married.
Every male in their lives, really. Men are more likely to grow a beard when they hear a woman tell them rather than a guy tell them. It's a fact. This is not something that's under debate, that women find men who have beards more attractive than those who don't.
He's not lying. I was reading an article earlier. I did a little bit of research, and apparently a 10-day-old beard is the prime time for the beard. And
Ollie, you're just coming into that.
I know.
That's
exactly right.
And it's because ladies see them as better fathers for their children.
Among other things.
Right.
Forgive me for expressing just a little bit of skepticism, especially considering the source, because there's another subject upon which Joseph seems to have very strong opinions, and that is that Greek culture is responsible for everything good in the world.
You're making like a question. It should be more like a statement.
And I've seen many, many posts on your Facebook page about, well, of course, it's Greek. It's self-evident that that's, we invented that, or that this good thing comes from us.
Right.
And so now I'm hearing that it's not just Greeks who have all these wonderful attributes. It's the kind-hearted, creative, and extremely good-looking bearded men.
I mean, isn't it true that all great Greek philosophers and artists and intellectuals had beards? And even many women, I'm saying, being Greece.
I'm not going to touch that. I'm not going to touch that. So I'm guessing then, in your opinion, or no, as a matter of fact, that you're simply sharing with us, the pinnacle of the human male is a bearded Greek.
That's well put. Thank you. I couldn't have put it better myself.
I see. All right. So we've got all these wonderful attributes, and yet we still continue to suffer discrimination. And so
we do.
So there's really a serious purpose under all of this fun as well.
In fact, you know, the first legal case that was brought forward in the United States by a bearded individual was in 1976. There was the famous Kelly versus Johnson case.
Oh, yes.
An actual police officer who sued the Suffolk County Police Department saying that he should be allowed to grow a beard on the grounds of First Amendment. What do you think about this, by the way?
Well, first of all, let me just remind myself, I think he lost.
You did.
He lost. And if I may say so, and I don't mean to correct you, I think he was actually bringing the substantive due process argument. I think he was arguing a liberty interest. And the court rejected that liberty interest. It acknowledged that he had a liberty interest, and that was important. But ultimately, it said that the interest of the police department and what it called a uniform appearance and promoting esprit de corps and allowing the public to clearly identify members of the police department. I don't know, I guess maybe the theory was the beards obscure your face or something, or maybe to identify them as police. Those outweighed his liberty interest in having a beard. Now, if that's my recollection of their reasoning, but the important thing is that they rejected his claim, right?
He lost. I believe the court made a distinction between members of the public at large,
right,
and police officers, who apparently had to conform to a uniformity, as it were. Again, there's so many ways you can challenge that, because that is so much a cultural construction. You could argue that 400 years ago, it would have been, in fact, compulsory for police officers to have beards. Just the fashions have changed, and that's why apparently police officers cannot have beards. I mean, the same thing with the military. I mean, it used to be, I guess, I imagine, I haven't done research on this, that the reason that they couldn't have beards is because of hygienic reasons.
The justification I was given when I was in the military for why you could have small sideburns and a mustache but not a beard along your jaw was that you had to have clean-shaven skin in order to have a seal on your gas mask. You know, obviously, if someone's trying to gas you, you need an airtight seal. And supposedly, having a beard might interfere with that. Now, at the time, that seemed reasonable to me. But you're looking very skeptical.
Oh, are you telling me that we can get a man on the moon? We can create a mask that can go around a beard? Is that what you're telling me?
I don't know. Maybe technology's advanced in the last 30 years.
There's actually many serious issues. Now, my personal theory is that the lack of bearded male in particular have actually hampered America's growth potential. Because that's what we don't have many children anymore, as we used to.
Oh, because, of course, bearded men are more virile.
Exactly.
In addition to being more attractive.
Exactly.
So there's simply more sex going on, and with more virile men and more children.
There you go.
Okay, well, then obviously
that's one thing that's serious. The other thing is, I think the lack of beards, particularly in our military, are hurting us in the war on terrorism in a very direct way.
Because they're just not as afraid of us?
Essentially, what's happening is, particularly in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, particularly Afghanistan, the local population does not consider you a worthy male species unless you have a beard. In fact, there's an Afghan saying, women and children have no beards, and I'm neither. Therefore, I have a beard. You know, so the fact that you have a beard separates you from, say, women and children, right? Mm-hmm. So when we have our own troops go out there and try to win the hearts and minds of the locals, and in most cases, this being Afghanistan, every village or city or town has elders who are in charge of the local population, of course, you know, with serious beards. We send this beardless American troops there to gain their hearts and minds, to gain their trust. And of course, it's impossible. Because in their culture, they don't see them as equals, as it were. Right? So, I mean, that's hurting America's ability to win the war on terrorism.
All the objections to beards are just falling like dominoes, one after the other, aren't they?
Men are designed by nature to grow beards. And they're telling you can't allow yourself to be the way you were designed. I mean, that goes to the heart of, doesn't it go to the heart of like why America exists?
Well, the strange thing is it does. It does, because self-expression, which is a First Amendment thing, or liberty, which is throughout the Constitution, due process clause, and maybe even equal protection, because growing a beard is to a great extent an immutable characteristic. I mean, if you're a man, you probably are going to have a beard.
Unless you're very unlucky.
Unless you're very unlikely, exactly right. Just one of those ugly, non-virile, right. Exactly, sort Beardless. Of uncreative people.
Right.
All of those things. No, there are actually several serious constitutional implications here. And another point that was made in the Law Review article that you shared with me, and for which I thank you again, Joseph, is that even if we just consider private actors, if we just consider employment law and a private company that says, thou shalt not have a beard, or the government saying the same thing, even though we give employers, including the government, some leeway in controlling the workplace, they're effectively saying you can't have a beard during your off hours either, because you can't grow a beard at 6 o'clock each evening and then shave it off the next morning and have it that night or over the weekend even. Unless, of course, you have an extremely fast-growing beard like Ollie. And Ollie might be the exception. But most of us, I mean, if you tell me I can't have a beard at work, that means effectively I can't have a beard ever, even in my private time. And that is, it's your face. It's literally the part of your body that is perhaps the most important part of your body that you share with the world. It says who you are. It goes to your identity. And those are all constitutionally protected values, regardless of how you look at, what part of the Constitution is implicated.
Basically, your employer won't allow you to be all you can be and won't allow you to express yourself, even when you're off the shift, you know. Ollie, would you ever, like, you manage Zazz's, would you ever tell your employees not to wear beards?
No, I wouldn't. Personally, I wouldn't. Okay. But there is some health department issues, too, with just some facial hair falling into food and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You can get some beard covers and that, but myself, I don't have any problem with it. A lot of time, I guess, when somebody does have a beard, it's either, like, I don't know how you do this, but it's either you have one or you don't have one. You know, the sort of transition between having, like, a dirty-looking face before it's actually grown in. I guess a lot of people don't like that, but I wouldn't, as a restaurateur, wouldn't have a problem. I don't know if all my customers would mind that, but...
But even if there is a health issue, I mean, there's a health issue with head hair as well.
Yeah.
I mean, and
right.
People wear hairnets for that very reason. So there are ways around it. In fact, almost any objection you can think of to beards, you can get around pretty quickly. And that's generally what the Constitution requires. You know, if the government wants to restrict something that's important to you, then it has to have a very, very good reason for doing so. And if there's a way to accommodate your desire that's reasonable, then the government should be required to do that. That's the general analysis. So if you can fix it with a beard net, like you can with a hairnet, then that would be a reason the government shouldn't be allowed to restrict you, or even perhaps a private employer. Well, anything else? Any other legal implications or other...
I think we're going to have a lot of people with beards after hearing this show this week.
I must admit to you that, you know, one of the great things about doing this show is that I learn a great deal. The Constitution is such a huge subject that, of course, nobody can know everything about it. People typically specialize, believe it or not, a lot of constitutional law professors will specialize in just one clause or one phrase from the Constitution, and it might be legitimate. There might be hundreds of cases on that. So one of the best things about doing the show is that I'm learning new stuff all the time, and I must say that I'm really having an epiphany here. I just had no idea. I thought this was just going to be silliness today, and we're all going to sit here and laugh.
This is how it happens. This is how you get sucked in. You become mindless Dr. Fitzanakis like minions that walk around.
Oh, I see. So this is simply the Fitzanakis effect.
This is all ploy.
Well, I have to say, when I began this in 2007, it was very much a marginal thing. But now, here we are 7 years later, and the beard lifestyle is really picking up. And it's largely thanks to, dedicated individuals who put forward the beard lifestyle, but also women who are very now vocal, particularly Maggie, for example. Like, she asked her husband, said, I will not marry you unless you grow a beard.
It wasn't that extreme, but
well,
he got the gist.
It was
very firm.
Well, one other aspect I wanted to mention is to do with politics.
Okay.
And that is, how interesting is it, really, that when you think of currently political figures, that none of them, the male ones or female ones, have beards?
Isn't that disturbing? It's hard to think of a politician who does.
John Bolton, he was the only one that had a mustache, not a full beard. But
okay.
Yeah, it was a fairly full mustache, but people remarked on it because it was notable.
He stood out because of that mustache. Mm-hmm. Well, he stood out with many things, but one of the mustache was one of them, right? In the international stage, I can think of Fidel Castro, who stands out, again, largely because of the beard. But that's pretty much, I mean, that's really pretty much non-Muslim in particular, because it's different in Muslim countries. But in America, the last president we had that had serious facial hair was Taft.
He had a mustache only.
A mustache, but right. A very nice
mustache. It was a nice mustache, it really was.
You know?
And then to go back, who was the last bearded president? Was that Garfield?
So we're going back, now we're going back.
Lincoln. To the 19th century.
Well, you have a story about Lincoln. Somebody asked him to grow the beard, or
Lincoln, absolutely. Lincoln, when he began running for office, there was one of his admirers, a young girl of 11 years old, who sent him a letter and said basically, "Mr. Lincoln, I should vote for you, and so will my brothers, if you were to grow a beard." Of course, she didn't say that, but she implied, you know, if you become basically somebody worth a notable person, because without a beard, I mean, look at Lincoln's face without the beard, because we have pictures of him. Mm-hmm. He's just a typical person. With the beard, he becomes a statesman.
He became Lincoln because of the beard.
Exactly. Can you separate Lincoln from his beard?
First, Jesus Christ. Then Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Could we go to any higher authority?
We can work on it.
We could. That is just remarkable. Well, it's funny you should mention politics, because people will associate beards with left-wing politics or even radical politics. On a few occasions, people have asked me why I grow a beard, or they've commented on it, and I've gotten the sense that they're sort of automatically assuming I'm just another pointy-headed, liberal, granola-munching, sandal-wearing, tie-dye professor because I've got a beard, when the explanation was much simpler, which is I got lazy. And I realized that I had the flexibility, and it just kind of happened. I think it happened over a long weekend once, like Ali's talking about. It just, you know, you get to the point where, that looks kind of interesting. And gosh, the last few days have been a lot easier without having to scrape hair off my face. So let's just see what happens. So it doesn't necessarily carry any political baggage from the point of the wearer, but from the point of the observer, it does seem to mark you as from, you know, sort of a Che Guevara perspective.
But then the other way of looking at that, too, is, I mean, I don't know if I can mention that show on here, is it Duck Dynasty. I mean, it's a conservative show. I mean, those
guys there's that strain, too. Yeah, it can be sort of the mountain man or the, the redneck sort of perspective as well.
Beards transcend politics is the answer, you know. Beards are bigger than politics. You know, in fact, bigger than anything else. There's a great story about the playwright George Bernard Shaw,
right?
Who had obviously, as all great men, had a great beard. Mm-hmm. And they asked him once, why did he stop shaving? And he said he told this story when he was a little kid, and he was looking at his dad shaving, which is a horrible thing for a child to have to see. But he was looking at his dad shaving in the mirror, and little George Bernard Shaw asked his dad, "Dad, why do you shave?" And his dad looked at him, he looked at the mirror, looked at him again, and he said, "Why the heck do I shave?" And from that day on, his dad never, ever shaved again. And that became a lesson for his child, who then grew an awesome beard. Every man would ask the question to themselves, "Why the heck do I shave?" That would pretty much, we could save so much money as a country, so much energy, right? So much time. If we stop this silly habit of destroying our facial hair, I called it beardicide.
Now, I'm going to have to call you, though. I'm going to have to call you on some hypocrisy that I can see right here now. I can see that there is a region on the bottom of below your beard, and I'm guessing on the upper edge as well, because you have a very nice trimmed beard. I'm betting that you actually do have a razor and that you use it just a little bit along the edges.
Do you see how guilty he looks right now? I'm probably the only one in here that has actually never shaved their beard.
Yeah, so. You're not as pure as you claim to be.
Thankfully, the American Constitution protects me from having to answer
that. So we bring the Fifth Amendment in as well. But, you know, it's kind of funny when you talk about politics. By and large, you know, with some perhaps notable exceptions, women don't have facial hair. And so, Maggie, you've looked at this as, a, if you will, a sort of a beard admirer perspective. Mm-hmm. I wonder is, I realize you're the only woman in the room and you can't speak for all of your gender. I wonder if there's any beard envy, if there's some women who like beards so much they really wish they could have them themselves.
I would say there's definitely some sort of like beard admirer to the point of wanting to have a beard. I'm sure there has to be women out there that feel that way.
I wonder if a woman in that position could go out, what would you do? Get a testosterone supplement and maybe smear it on?
I would imagine that's what you would do. I have heard of somebody that has happened to.
Are you serious?
Yes.
A woman who wanted a beard so much and admired.
Not necessarily because of that, but it was for other reasons that she was close to somebody that was using androgel. And she was exhibiting signs of male pattern baldness, of beard growth, of mustache growth. And so her
husband...
Would
that be disqualifying for your competition? If a woman came in the category and actually had a beard, would you have to do a drug test to make sure she wasn't juicing?
I'm not sure. Like start a new category or something.
We've never thought of that. So is it really that simple?
Ladies, don't
I think it should be that. I think it, yeah.
What about men? Because that does promote facial hair. You might have to start doing some drug testing here.
If somebody will go to that length to grow a beard, I have many friends of mine or students of mine who come to me in desperation saying things like, Dr. J, I cannot grow a beard. What can I do? And I always say, turn to science. I didn't realize it was that simple, but basically just some testosterone will help you. So, I mean, that means that we can save and turn around so many lives. Think about it.
Well, you know, our producer, Wayne Winkler, has a really good beard, too. I'm looking at him through the window here. Does everyone admire that? That's really the more of the Van Dyke or Dr. Evil style beard.
There you go.
Now, is that within the realm of an acceptable beard, or do you really fault people who shave that much of their faces?
It has a lot to do with self-expression. Every beard is different. Every mustache is different. I mean, compare, say, Stalin with Hitler.
So that's actually your justification then for that thing that you won't admit. It's just part of the creativity that maybe you need just to trim up the edges slightly just to get the particular expression that you want.
Not every beard is the same, and every person has a different. I mean, this is America after all, right? Let's not forget this.
Okay.
Compare, say, you know, some of the Duck Dynasty guys with Lincoln, again. A different effect is what you're looking for. You can all not be the same. That's the reason why the military wanted people to grow beards. We don't want to fall into that sort of pattern of ask for complete uniformity, right?
Well, once again, what are the details on the upcoming beard competition so that people can write it down and come and enter? Give us the details again.
It's on November 22nd at Woolfields Brewing in Abingdon at 2 p.m. Registration is at the door. Just come and have fun. That's the main thing. As I said, all the proceeds that we raise from the beard event itself will be donated to the Nyswanger Children's Hospital.
So, and where can people find you online?
We have a Facebook page, Zazie's Coffee House, Wolf Hill's Facebook page. We do need a website, actually.
Is there one for the Tri-Cities Beard Club?
We have a Facebook site.
Okay. And what's it actually called?
Tri-Cities Beard Club.
Tri-Cities Beard Club on Facebook. Well, Ollie, Maggie, and Joseph, thank you very much for all of these actually rather intriguing insights.
Beards are what life is all about, essentially. It should be the dream of every man and every woman to do their part to make this country better by growing or encouraging growth of more beards.
And that's our show, and a particularly fuzzy one, if I may say so. Thanks very much to Joseph and Maggie and Ollie, all from the Tri-Cities Beard Club, for sharing with us their remarkable insights on the constitutional significance of facial hair. Oh, and by the way, here's a shout-out to our friends at WEHC at Emory and Henry College. They've just installed solar panels, a whole solar array, and their entire radio station is powered by the sun. Congratulations to our friends at WEHC. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler, who has a beard. Our distribution engineers are Bob Hoffman, who used to have a beard, and Chad Barrett, who has a remarkable beard. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. No beard for Carol. And, of course, I'm Stuart Harris. And if you've looked at our Facebook page, you know that I have a really pretty beard. And remember, you, whether you have facial hair or not, are a part of the American experiment.